To the Batmobile. Let's go.
Atomic batteries to power. Turbines to speed.
Roger. Ready to move out.
Joining us now from the Batcave, ladies and gentlemen, from ballet to the Batcave and beyond, Yvonne Craig, otherwise known as Batgirl, joins us live. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Nice to talk to you.
Oh, thank you.
I was looking at your biography, looking at all the movies that you did, and I said to myself, this woman has lots of stories to tell. And then you come out with a book that tells the stories.
Yes, yes, yes.
It's a great book, too. I love it.
Oh, thank you. I'm so glad you enjoyed it.
And did you publish this on your own?
No, actually, I did it through a very small publisher in Venice.
Kudu.
And they were nice enough to allow me to, the reason I went with them was because they allowed me to have all merchandising rights, marketing rights, actually, for the first 4 months. And now, of course, it's in bookstores. But for the first 4 months, it was only on my website and only at conventions that I appeared in. Yeah.
This is a great... I did not realize that you had such a long career in show business. Talk about
yes,
when...
it felt short.
Yeah,
when you're having fun, it feels short.
I guess so.
I guess.
Tell us a little bit about, first of all, where you got discovered, how you moved from ballet into the movie biz.
Okay. all the aspiring actors and actresses who are madly studying now are just going to hate this. But... I had come to Los Angeles because, of course, I was a ballet dancer, and I had been with the Ballet Russe, and my teacher in New York was ill, and I was getting ready to go with the Marquita Cuevas Company in Monte Carlo. And I had about 3 months and figured I would come, I would study somewhere, and New York was out because my teacher had tuberculosis. So I chose Los Angeles over Chicago simply because... in Chicago, there was a stage that had the classroom had a slant to it, and I just thought, oh, there's going to be so much trouble trying to do pirouettes on a slant when, you know, most stages don't have it, and why are you bothering? So I came to Los Angeles, was having dinner in a restaurant, and John Ford's son, Patrick, came over to the table and said to me, excuse me, my name is Patrick Ford, and I'm a producer, and are you an actress? And I said, because I had my mouth full, I'm waving my hand like, let me swallow, and I will tell you that I'm a ballet dancer. And the man sitting with me said to him, yes, she is, and I'm her manager. What can we do for you?
Uh-huh. Good move.
So that's how I wound up doing my first movie, and it was with John Wayne's son, Patrick Wayne.
In The Young Land.
Yeah.
Now, was he a nice guy?
Oh, he was adorable.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was a really nice guy. I think it says something about John Wayne, whether you agree or disagree with his politics, whether you think he's a good actor or bad. He had lots of children, and all of them have nothing but good things to say about him. I mean, they really, really liked him.
Yeah, no daddy dearest in that family.
No way. And it isn't just because they're protective. I mean, they just had a good growing up experience. And Patrick was I often thought, too sane to be an actor.
Hmm.
I mean, he was a well-rounded, nice kid.
Hmm.
Yeah, he was delightful.
Now, talk about nice kids who were delightful. You also worked with a guy named Elvis Presley. He was a little-known singer.
Yes.
In a movie called It Happened at the World's Fair and Kissin' Cousins.
Right.
What was Elvis the man like working with?
You know, he was dear. When I worked with him right after he was out of the service and just before he married Priscilla, and he was very, very professional. I never saw him do anything diva-like ever. He always came to the set, knew what he was doing, knew his lines, was perfectly delightful to work with, and it was a great experience. He had all of those guys that hung out with him, so it was like having 15 brothers on the set all the time. I mean, you know, they would say, do you want a Coke? Do you want a Pepsi? Do you want... They would pull out your chair. They would light your... At that time, I smoked. They would light your cigarette. I mean, it was just really... It was fun. It was fun.
Did you find him a sexy guy?
You know, it was strange. I found him... I found him to be appealing and felt very protective toward him. Even though he was older than I was, he seemed very unworldly, and you just didn't want him to know that bad things could happen ever. But I didn't find him particularly sexy. He had kind of a pudding face. I mean, he didn't have really good bones.
Uh-huh.
But when you saw him on screen, that's all you saw.
Yeah.
I mean, he could be sitting in the corner doing nothing, and your eyes were drawn to him. He was just riveting on screen. Yeah.
I mean, you've worked with so many of the big leading men of the time. I'm looking, you know, James Coburn and In Like Flint.
Yeah.
And you even got to kiss him, didn't you?
Oh, yes. Listen, I kissed almost everybody. when you're the leading lady, you get to kiss everybody.
Is that the fringe benefits?
That's one good reason not to be a character actress.
There you go. And Sal Mineau and Gene Krupa story.
Right.
What
right.
were these folks like? I mean, you know, now they're legendary.
Well, you know, they are. And at that time, you know, we were all just doing a job that we really loved. And so they were all just people doing a job that they really liked. I mean, you know, this is certainly not to compare us to astronauts, but I always thought until I met an astronaut that they must just live some sort of miraculous life. And then I met one, and it was like, well, yeah, that's what I do. And
yeah,
and you think, right, and he also has to brush his teeth or they fall out, mm-hmm. and he also has to, you know, find food every day or he dies. And so we're all kind of like that, even though people would like to think that we never eat or sleep or brush our teeth like others.
Well, it is amazing the way people take on legendary status. I mean, you were with Bing Crosby in High Time.
Right.
Here's a guy that... and by the way, he has children that do say nasty things about him, but...
I know he does.
Yeah.
I think probably with reason, he admitted to having been an alcoholic for a lot of years, and that's no way for a kid to have to grow up. I mean, children of alcoholics don't have any center because they just... You know, you never know what the mood is going to be from moment to moment, day to day, and that's unnerving for a kid.
Yeah,
I think the reason I am mentally healthy is because I had two mentally healthy parents who were not impressed with show business. I mean, they treated it as, well, if that's what you want to do, then you may do it, but make sure that you do it to the best of your ability. And they would have loved me equally if I had said, well, what I really want to do is be a ditch digger.
Right. Well, that's important. It's very important. You know, it's interesting we're talking about, talking to Yvonne Craig, and it's interesting to note all the people in showbiz, the good, the bad, the mean, the nice. And I've had thousands of people on this show, and some of them stand out as really, really sweet, and I know some of them are people you've worked with. For instance, one of the nicest people I've ever met is Dwayne Hickman.
Isn't he charming?
Yeah, he's really a really
Isn't
nice guy.
Charming?
As a matter of fact, the first time he came on the show, he was telling me all these stories, and I said, you know, you really should write a book. He said, no, I don't think so. I said, come on, you can write a book, you know? And he ended up, of course, writing a book
and
sent me
did.
A signed copy of it. But
oh, well, good. Well, I think the reason he finally did was because he's married to a wonderful lady who's a writer.
Exactly.
And so they did that together. And, yeah, it's a lot easier. I had a rough time starting mine simply because I don't type.
Really?
Yeah, I don't type. And so I type, but I typed two-fingered, sort of like a chimp could probably type faster than I do. And so I was truncating all of the stories that I had to tell just because I didn't want to have to look for the letters.
Right.
And finally came upon a voice-activated software program for my computer. And it just made all the difference in the world because, first of all, it recognizes only your voice. You program it to recognize your voice. So if the telephone rings, it doesn't bother it. And if my husband comes into the room and talks to me, it doesn't pick up his voice at all. But it writes everything that you say. And the faster you talk, the happier it is. And I talk really fast. And so it just made a world of difference. I mean, then I started saying, okay, well, this story isn't nearly finished because this also happened and that happened and, oh, that reminds me of. And so it just, it took on a life of its own once I had the software.
Well, I think that the story itself is great. From Ballet to the Batcave and Beyond is the name of the book, and it's an excellent book. We're going to tell you about how to get it, and I'll tell you the website in a minute.
Okay.
But there's also some incredible photos in this thing that really kind of just show you from birth to now. It's just amazing.
Yes.
An amazing situation.
Well, I didn't want to start the book talking about, you know, I was born here, and then I did this, and then I was a Girl Scout, because I think people are really interested in the show business part of it. So I just started from my show business beginnings and went. And then the beyond part was going to be my life after show business. And I realized that it really shouldn't have been. It should have been my life after Batman and my career after Batman. And so I did that instead because my life after show business was very interesting, but it was a whole other career.
Right.
And then there's a whole other book that probably could be written just about the adventure travel that my husband and I do, because we do a lot of adventure travel and safaris and whitewater rafting in Ecuador and just fun things.
One of the things I wanted to talk about, because we'll talk about Batman here, we had Adam West and Burt Wood on our show a couple of times, and Burt wrote a book that was book about what a wild guy he was.
I know.
And him and Adam doing these things. Did you at all see any of this stuff on the set?
No, I did not. I did not. And I tell you what, it's my opinion that some of that happened, and that it happened prior to my getting there, but it never happened on the set. It may have happened in their dressing room. It may have happened on the road, because we did they were the hottest show around, the first season. I mean, when I joined the show the third season, they had said to me, we would like you to do some personal appearances on the weekends, and we will get you bodyguards. And I said, whatever for? And they said, well, people will tear your clothes off. I mean, they've grabbed at Bert and Adam and torn their capes off and all of this stuff. And I said, I don't think so. I mean, for a couple of reasons. First of all, I wouldn't permit that, and I have enough presence that they wouldn't dare. And secondly, until Madonna made it all different for all the women and made that acceptable, it was not acceptable to society to rip at women's clothing. And so I said, I don't think you're going to have any problem at all, and indeed they didn't. But back to Bert. He infers in interviews and a bit in the book that this was happening behind sets behind flats on the set.
Right.
And I'm here to tell you that did not happen, and I don't think it happened the first or second season either, simply because if you've ever been on a movie, on a television or a movie set, things are going on all over that soundstage. I mean, and not that kind of thing.
Right.
We had children on the set almost every day because it was a big hit with the kids. And you have people, when you're in one section, they're building in a second section, and the only time they stop hammering is when you're trying to get quiet for a rehearsal or when you're doing a take. But, I mean, there are people all over, and so there's no room for those sexual escapades to be happening there.
I didn't buy any of it, by the way.
Well, that's not to say that that sexual escapades didn't happen, because actually it was the swinging 60s, and I think they did. But when I read his book, because he had asked me to write the foreword for it, and I said I committed before I'd read the book, and then I was really hard put as to quite what to say. but the writer was Stanley Ralph Ross, and he wrote a lot of, he was Bert's editor, and he wrote a lot of Batmans. And he said to me, did you know that was going on? And I said, no, no, I didn't. He said, what did you do? I said, listen, we were shooting one every 3 days. I went home and went to sleep so I could sleep fast and get up and work again.
Mm.
And so he said, well, I was married. I think I missed out.
Now, you just mentioned the touring and stuff. I mean, there is a huge cult around Batman.
Yes.
But there's even a bigger cult around Star Trek, which you were also part of.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
I mean, just from the appearance of playing Marta, you can do all the Star Trek conventions, and the people will just love you.
Yes, and the interesting thing is when I did the book, on the back cover is a picture of Marta from Star Trek.
Oh, yeah.
And that was going to be the front cover because I really thought it was mysterious and interesting looking, and I thought it would grab one's attention. And then I woke up in a cold sweat one night and said, nobody knows that's you. Nobody. I mean, they walk up to me at conventions and say, oh, I didn't know you were the Green Lady, too.
Mm.
And so,
yeah.
So I thought, why would you put an unrecognizable picture on the front of a book?
You have to put Batgirl. That Batgirl picture is great, too. So you
Isn't
have to
that
put
fun?
That on there.
Yeah. Yes. I think that's just sort of... Yeah.
I must tell you, Yvonne, after reading your book, I decided that I shouldn't be in radio. I should have been a makeup person on Star Trek.
Uh-oh. Well, you see, yes, it wouldn't have done you much good, though, because makeup in those days, and I don't know whether it holds over today as well, body makeup people were always women. Only women were allowed to be body makeup people, and men were the makeup artists. Now it's switched around. I notice there are tons of female makeup artists, and so my guess is that maybe they have male body makeup people as well. I mean, it's loosened up somewhat.
Because you actually at one point were completely nude in front of the makeup person.
Yes. Yeah. And it was a guy, because, I mean,
yeah. Well,
that's
what I
was
illegal. That's what I was talking about, see? That's what I was saying. That's why I want to be a makeup person. Now you got it, see?
I don't think that happens very often. I don't think they have
But
the
I read it in your book, though, and
I said,
this is a new career I want to pursue now.
Okay, well, I'll put your name in the hopper and see if anybody would like you to apprentice to them.
Mm. Now, you work with some pretty interesting characters, and one of them I always thought was very funny, and I want to know what he's like in real life. Don Knotts, you worked in How to Frame a Fig.
Very serious.
Is he hilarious? He's serious?
No, very serious.
Really?
Yeah. He is hysterical once the camera starts rolling, but he is a very serious man.
Mm-hmm.
He's a sweet man. But I mean, he isn't full of hijinks and carryings on. He just isn't. He's quite serious, and I was amazed.
I'm amazed too, because you just picture him to be like that.
Yeah. I think probably, although I've never worked with him, I think Tim Conway is probably off the wall in person as well as on screen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, my favorite picture in the entire book, by the way, is the picture of you, the ad still from Ski Party.
Oh, right. In my bikini
and the ski poles.
On skis.
Very impressive. Very impressive.
And you know, I must have just had the heat of youth because I wasn't even cold.
Hmm. You know, it's interesting. You worked with a few people more than once. Cesar Romero, you did Seven Women from Hell, and of course he played the Penguin?
Joker.
The Joker, yeah.
Yeah.
So he was in Batman.
Right.
And of course, Neil Hamilton, which people don't remember. He was, of course, your dad on Batman, but he was also on Perry Mason playing your father.
Right, and it's interesting because apparently he was like a matinee idol in his youth. By the time that he got to us on Batman, he was in his, although I didn't know it, he was in his 70s playing my father.
Right.
Yeah.
It's amazing, huh?
Yeah, it really was.
Yeah.
And we, neither of us remembered having worked with one another, or if he did, he didn't mention it, and I didn't remember, and I can't help but think, I've not seen any of these films, any of them, since I did them. And so it's difficult to remember whether we had any scenes together or not. I would assume if I were his daughter, we must have done. But I, you know, it's just, it's a lot of, in those days, it was just a lot of work because there was a lot more work to be done.
Right.
There were just, you know, they did 33 or I guess about 33 episodes for everything. And there were a lot of guest roles. And now, of course, they do ensemble things so that you know what your cost is going to be. So Friends very seldom, you know, have guest parts that are very large. And the Cosby Show didn't have any, as I recall. They were all just, you know, an ensemble. And so, you know, it makes a difference as to how often you see actors and actresses that you like just right. because there aren't that many guest roles.
Hmm. I was looking at, Ski Party had Dwayne Hickman in it as well, so you worked
yes.
with him there, too.
Yes, yes. Wow. That was one of the reasons I chose to do it, because I thought, oh, God, I love working with Dwayne. This should be fun.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Now, whether I know that you had a run-in with, not a run-in, but you had an experience working with someone who I also had on the show and thought was one of the biggest jerks I've ever met, a guy named William Shatner from Star Trek.
Yes.
And you don't have kind things to say about him in your book as well.
Does anybody?
No. I mean,
no,
nobody,
I don't,
how could
I,
you?
You know, I tell you what was appalling to me just recently, I mean, in the last couple of years. You know, his wife died. She drowned in the swimming pool.
Right.
And I don't know whether this says something about our society or whether it says something about his credibility in particular or people liking him in particular, but more than one person said to me, well, do you think he killed her?
Hmm.
And I just thought, you know, that's a huge leap. That's a huge leap, and it's that's a terrible thing to say about somebody. I mean, that they have murdered their wife. I don't think you should take that lightly, but that anybody could even say that about him or think that about him leads me to believe that there's something radically wrong with him or society in general, that they could believe that somebody would do that.
Well, people who know him and have worked with him, I mean, talk about the set on Star Trek and him and Leonard Nimoy and some of the folks on the show.
All right, but if I talk too much about this, then absolutely nobody will read the book because we've just discussed everything that's in it.
there's tons of stuff in this book for people to read. Believe me, Yvonne. They'll buy it anyway.
Okay, well,
just for the pictures, they'll buy
let
it.
Let me just say this much. Leonard was a joy. He was just a joy, and I have a feeling he always has been to work with. And you can check anybody else's book as well as mine about Bill Shatner. He is just he was just, and I don't know whether he still is because I don't work with him, but he was the most selfish, self-involved, egotistical actor I had ever worked with, ever.
Yeah, but you like his hairpiece, though.
That he denies.
Well,
you know, he is still denying that he wears a hairpiece. Come
right.
on.
Yeah. It's a little much.
Well, the last time I saw it, I saw it in real life, and it looked like yak hair.
Oh, my.
Oh, dear. Mm. Well.
Now, yeah, I also wanted to ask you about Rudy Valley.
Rudy Valley.
Yeah.
Well, he was just, you know, I don't know. We did a four-parter with him on the Batman show, and I was looking forward to it because my mother had said, oh, Rudy Valley, you know, he used to sing and all of this stuff. So I thought, oh, wow, I'm going to get to work with somebody that, you know, is of my mother's time and so on and so forth. And he arrived on the set, and he was a complete curmudgeon. He was just foul-tempered, didn't interact with anybody except in scenes, would go over and sit with his feet up. And I don't know whether it was just he was old and cranky or whether it was because he wanted a street name change. He wanted his street on which he lived to be called Rue de Valet. And the city said, sorry. And he was really a bent out of shape about that. And I don't know whether he brought it to work with him or not, but he was not a joy by any stretch of the imagination. But because it took place in London, and his cohort was Glynis Johns, who has, you know, that wonderful voice, and she's just a delightful lady, it took the curse off having to have him on the set for four whole episodes. Because she was around and she was a joy.
You know, I'm looking through all of the TV shows that you were a guest on. It's just amazing to me.
Yeah,
I mean, everything from Wild Wild West to Ben Casey to Love American Style and Mod Squad.
I did four of those.
McHale's Navy.
Yes.
Man from Uncle. I mean, it's just—it's really kind of cool. You work with pretty much everybody in the business.
Yeah, I think I did.
Wow.
I think I probably didn't miss too many people. It was a smaller group of working actors then. You know, I mean, it was just a smaller group. Now it's a huge amount of people looking for a minimum amount of jobs.
Mm.
And if somebody came to me today and said they wanted to be an actor or an actress, I would certainly try to dissuade them.
Yeah, it's a tough business.
It is, and there are fewer people making decisions. I mean, because they now have corporate obligations. It used to be the studios were run by people who said, I mean, Jack Warner said yay or nay, and for all of his being awful, Harry Cohn said yay or nay, and now you know, you have a board of directors and you're responsible to them.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, it's sort of, it's kind of a group decision, and everybody's afraid to make the first move, so lots of things don't get done, and then people get better jobs or get fired or whatever, and things that were on, you know, fairly far down the line and on their way to being produced then get dropped. Because it was, you know, it wasn't invented here, and so it's really,
yep.
It's a mess to get anything done.
Yeah. We're talking with Yvonne Craig. You know, one of the things that has come out from, you know, it's developed since many years ago when TV was in its prime is, of course, cable. And some of these stations like Nick at Night that put all these shows over again. And because of that, shows like Star Trek and Batman
right.
have whole new generations of people watching it. So I'm just wondering what people will say when they meet you for the first time. I'm assuming they're thinking they're going to see this 20-year-old girl.
Well, some of them do think that's what it's going to be. A lot of young independent, well, not a lot, but some young independent writers, producers will send me material and say, you know, we'd like to have you in this, not realizing that what they're looking at on Nick at Night was 30 years ago. And I read it thinking, where is my part? Where is my part? Where is my part?
Mm-hmm.
There is no mother here. There is no grandmother here. What is going on? And then you find out that they think that they're the first person to see this show. And if they had checked with their parents, they'd probably find out that their parents watched it.
That's funny, huh? Now, if you want to, folks, want to get a copy of this, you can easily get it. You can go right to www.yvonnecraig.com. That's YVONNECRAIG.com.
Right.
YVONNECRAIG.com. And get on the site and check it out.
Yes, thanks so much. The only place you can get a signed copy, actually, is from there or an 800 number. Shall I give you the 800 number?
Absolutely.
Okay, 1-800, let's see, what is it, 577-0494. And you can get signed or unsigned copies through that. That's part of, I don't know, that's part of a fulfillment house with Kudu Press. But other than that, you know, go to your local bookstore. It's around somewhere.
Well, YvonneCraig.com is a good place to visit. And the number again is 1-800-577-0494. And Yvonne, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you.
Thank you.